This morning, I'm excited to get into the life of Abraham again, and we're going to look at three events in his life and connect the three and see how God was working in Abraham's life to lead him down a spiritual pilgrimage, really to develop him spiritually, to grow him. And I hope that we'll find that very practical for ourselves. So these three events that we're going to look at today, and I'll go ahead and put the intro up here to show you where we're headed. These three events demonstrate for us a personal defeat, and then we see a personal victory in the second passage we'll look at. And then thirdly, we see Abraham being useful to God for service. And hopefully we can see that that's a pattern as well for our lives, and we'll find that it's, I hope, a very practical look at the life of Abraham. So we ask ourselves, how did he handle defeat? And how did he respond to that? How did he handle victory and respond to that? How did he exercise faith to overpower his enemies and to help others in time of need? And so these are things that we all face as well, and you can see the outline there. So let's get right into it this morning. We are first going to look at a personal defeat. There we go. And let's turn to chapter 12. Now, we, of course, will move quickly through here, and I'm actually assuming that you are already familiar with these stories. If you've ever studied the life of Abraham, this is nothing new to you. So I'm going to deal more with kind of analyzing it and looking at it. How is this practically going to help us in our Christian lives, as opposed to trying to teach the details of what actually occurred? We can't really dive into these passages because we are surveying these biblical characters. And as you can see, we're actually looking at three passages today, any one of which could have been easily an entire Sunday school lesson. So the personal defeat of Abraham, let's look at verses 10 to 20 of Genesis chapter 12. And there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down into Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was grievous in the land. And it came to pass, when he was come near to enter into Egypt, that he said unto Sarai his wife, "Behold now, I know that thou art a fair woman to look upon. Therefore it shall come to pass, when the Egyptians shall see thee, they shall say, 'This is his wife,' and they will kill me, but they will save thee alive. So I pray thee, say, I pray thee, thou art my sister, that it may be well with me for thy sake, and my soul shall live because of thee." And it came to pass that when Abram was come into Egypt, the Egyptians beheld the woman, that she was very fair. The princes also of Pharaoh saw her and commended her before Pharaoh, and the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. And he entreated Abram well for her sake, and he had sheep and oxen and asses and men servants and maid servants and she asses and camels. And the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. And Pharaoh called Abram and said, "What is this thou hast done unto me? Why didst thou not tell me that she was thy wife? Why sayest thou, 'She is my sister'? So I might have taken her to me to wife. Now therefore, behold thy wife, take her and go thy way." And Pharaoh commanded his men concerning him, and they sent him away and his wife and all that he had. Well, there are some interesting circumstances here, and we want to look at the role that circumstances played here in Abraham's defeat. The famine had forced Abraham to make a choice. He's looking at a dilemma in his life, a very real problem. And one of the values of the circumstances that we each face in our lives is that they absolutely force us to take steps of faith. They force us into a place of decision. And in that sense, we can be thankful for circumstances. They really take away the option of spiritual neutrality, don't they? And I'm sure each of us this morning can think about situations that we're facing in our lives and how, even in an uncomfortable way, those circumstances are forcing us to step up to the plate and have to make a decision. We cannot be neutral. We cannot just slide by. And this is what happened to Abraham. Now, he made the wrong choice. He responded wrongly to the circumstances that confronted themselves. But he perceived the circumstance and he realized the dilemma that he was in. And so circumstances prod us to victory or to defeat. And they force us to take steps of growth. So in that sense, they are opportunities, aren't they? They are opportunities to grow and to assess where we're at. Because I have to ask myself, am I really able to take this step of faith that I'm being confronted with? I don't really feel ready for what has been dropped in my lap today. See? And so we can be thankful that circumstances prod us to grow, but there is the fearful prospect of failure. There is no guarantee that we're going to succeed when God allows circumstances into our lives. There are we have before us a prime biblical example of a man who did not respond by faith, but by sight, and suffered a great defeat. Now, let's look also at the role of fear in defeat in our Christian lives. If you think about it, you will probably find an element of fear almost in every instance in our lives where we have suffered a spiritual defeat. Somehow, fear played a role. It was the enemy of faith, and we made a bad decision that was in some degree rooted in fear. So there was a big fear factor in Abraham's decision here. It's very obvious when you look at it. And he's begging his wife, please make this sacrifice for me, because otherwise I'm a dead man. And so Abraham really faced a fearful dilemma here. And he correctly surmised that really, apart from divine intervention, he was confronted with two dreadful choices: share his wife or die. That's all he saw on the horizon. Now, he could die of hunger outside of Egypt, or he could die at the hands of the Egyptians for the sake of his wife. Now, let's at least try to walk a few steps in his sandals, because that is the whole theme of this entire series on biblical characters, walking in their sandals. We really want to try to go beyond just learning what happened in these interesting stories and rehashing that. We really want to learn from the experiences of the saints of the past. And so we need to see here that this was a fearful dilemma. You know, it's easy for us this morning to sit here in the comfort of a pew, and we can be like Peter, who looked into the face of the Lord with all sincerity and said, well, I'm not going to deny you. I'll die first. But he was wrong, wasn't he? He overestimated his spiritual strength, his resolve. And so we would do well this morning to try to put ourselves in Abraham's place and realize at least the situation that he was facing and how difficult it was for him. So, as I mentioned a moment ago, fear is often our enemy. It is the enemy of faith many times. It's a fear of the unknown. It's a fear of failure. And the exercise of faith is almost always a victory over fear. So we really don't have any excuse for saying no to God, do we? For compromising our principles on the altar of expediency. Because God calls for us to choose faith over fear. And Abraham sacrificed his principles. He sacrificed his morality. And he lost his testimony for the sake of expediency in a particular circumstance. We have a word for that, don't we? Pragmatism. Believers are not supposed to be pragmatists. We are supposed to be people of principle who live lives based on a belief of doctrine, a doctrinal foundation. That's the ideal of how we're supposed to live our lives. That's the foundation of a testimony. Now, so we see here the role of fear. Then we have the pain of defeat. And there's a lot of pain in this passage. There's pain, first of all, to our loved ones. When we suffer a spiritual defeat in our lives, we hurt the people around us. We cause pain in our homes, to our spouses, to our children. There's fallout from our failure. And so this is the pain of defeat. This is the harvest that Abraham had to deal with in this situation. And look with me in verse 11 at how it affects loved ones. Here in verse 11, he said unto Sarai, his wife, behold now, I know thou art a fair woman, and so forth and so on. He involved her. He went to her. He said, please cooperate with me in this. Please sacrifice your principles, your morality for my sake. So he involved her in his failure. And we can only surmise how this must have impacted her. But we can know with certainty that it was not an impact for good. So Abraham's failure hurt his wife. Spiritual defeat affects us and those around us. When we blow a hole in our boat, everyone on board sinks with us. That's the idea here. Now, it also causes pain to our testimonies. And there's an irony here. So how sad it is when a child of the world casts moral rebuke at a child of God. When the unbeliever instructs the believer in the ways of righteousness. So what a humbling experience it is here for Abraham. We read Pharaoh's words in verse 18. Look with me at verse 18. He says to Abraham, what is this that thou hast done unto me? He calls him on the carpet for his morality. Why didst thou not tell me that she was thy wife? Now, of course, let me take a moment to point out Pharaoh's hypocrisy here. We don't want to put him up on a pedestal. This is no vindication of Pharaoh. Like our politicians in Washington, he was incomparably more evil than Abraham. Okay? His rebuke of Abraham really smacks of false piety here and insincerity. Let's make no mistake about it. He, had it not been for divine intervention, he would not have spared Abraham despite knowing that Sarai was his wife. Okay? So we have to say, though, nonetheless, Abraham lost the high ground. Despite the character of Pharaoh, That's immaterial. Abraham, the child of God, the believer, he lost the moral high ground in this situation. It's a great defeat for him. And it causes pain to his testimony. It really destroys his testimony. So at this point, any words of righteousness that he would speak would ring empty, wouldn't they? In light of his faithless deceit here. And yet, what do you see in this passage? A lot of grace. A lot of grace in this passage. Let us not fail to see God's abundant grace. Even though Abraham arguably didn't deserve it, and some people, like Job's friends, or perhaps even church members, would suggest that he should suffer the consequences of his wrongdoing, of his bad choice, God rescued him. We can learn from that. God rescued him. And let's just get the true picture here. We tend to magnify the fear factor in a faith decision. We tend to magnify. That's our natural tendency. We see fear and its ramifications more easily than what faith could do if we make the right choice. That's natural for us. We tend to minimize faith unless the Spirit of God is energizing us and the Word of God is energizing us. We tend to minimize the impact of faith. But consider for a moment the true picture here. Just think about it. Abraham knew that he needed divine intervention, didn't he? If he exercised faith, he would need divine intervention. That part he knew. That part he was afraid of. What he didn't take into account that was equally true was that he needed just as much divine intervention even if he didn't exercise faith. Even if he made the sinful choice as he did, he still needed God's divine intervention, didn't he? Because look at how it played out. God still had to rescue him. So why not make the right choice in the beginning and have the victory and see God's intervention in victory rather than God's intervention in defeat? Well, thank God for a God that intervenes in both situations. But if we would just have a godly perspective on life, you and I would realize that God's power is equally needed whether we're in a state of defeat or victory. And if Abraham had only taken a hold of that great truth, he would have been able to reach out and take the step of faith. Now, at the end of the day then, it would have been just as rational of a choice to trust God than to make the wrong decision. In that sense, there really wasn't a dilemma after all, was there? Now, one final observation, and then we'll move very quickly through the next two points. Pharaoh sent Abraham out of Egypt, right? He kicked him out. He said, get out of here. Did Abraham and his wife perish in the famine? I mean, they had to go to Egypt, right, to keep from perishing in the famine. And then Pharaoh kicked them out of Egypt. Did they perish? No. It suggests to us that if Abraham had trusted God to not even go down to Egypt in the first place, maybe God wanted to use the famine to teach him that he could take care of him. And he missed that opportunity to learn that lesson. So there's a lot going on here in this story. And it is a story of personal defeat. But Abraham learns from it. Abraham moves on from it. He didn't stay in that situation. And we see that he now has a situation of great victory. Let's look at chapter 13, verses 1 to 18. And because time is getting away from me, I had intended to read all 18 verses. But we're going to dispense with that simply because I do not have the time. And I want to get through the lesson. There's a very important discussion point at the end of this lesson that I want to get us all involved in. So you can anticipate that. But you're familiar with the story, I hope. Abraham and Lot, they come, Abraham and Lot, their herdsmen are arguing with one another. The land's not big enough for the two of them to live together. And Abraham graciously allows Lot to pick the preferred place. Abraham had every right to take the well-watered plain of Jordan. Lot took what was appealing to the eye, and Abraham trusted God to meet his needs by giving Lot the choice. It was a real step of faith. It demonstrates in a very real way Abraham learned from what happened in Egypt. Okay? So we have here restoration to fellowship. Thankfully, defeat was not the end of the story for Abraham, and the same is true for our lives, thankfully. God is in the restoration business, and in chapter 13 and verse 3, it tells us that Abraham traveled back to Bethel. We could say a lot about that, where he had been at his starting point. You know, at times we need to hit the spiritual reset button in our lives. We will suffer defeats, but we have to hit the spiritual reset button. It's one thing to suffer a spiritual defeat. It's far worse to wallow in the pig pen. We have that wonderful hymn, "Come Thou Fount." Remember those words? Prone to wander. Prone to leave the God I love. That's the way we all are. But let's not wallow there in defeat. Let's, like Abraham, get up, learn from our mistakes, and don't repeat them, and let God use it for good. Because he's a gracious God who will use our failures for good in our lives, and we can take something good away from that defeat. That's what Abraham did. And you see Abraham now as a strong man of faith here in this situation, trusting God rather than with his eyes looking at the well-watered plain. So he learned from his failure. It reminds me of Romans 8:28. And learning from failure. So you can almost hear him telling Sarai, in contradistinction to what he said to her in the previous passage, you know, let's let God make the choice for us this time. I made the choice last time, and we saw how that turned out. Let's let God make, let's put God to the test here. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to let Lot make the choice, and let's see if God can prove himself in this situation. I can almost hear him in the tent whispering that to Sarai. And I can see her respect for her husband as a spiritual leader growing, saying, wow, God has really worked in my husband's life, you see. So we have to say that Abraham's victory here is probably to a large degree facilitated by the lessons he learned from his spiritual defeat in Egypt. Lot, on the other hand, he chooses by sight, not by faith. He chooses friendship with the world, love of the world, conformity to the world. It doesn't take long before Lot suffers judgment from the world, or with the world, I should say. And that really brings us to our third point this morning, usefulness and service. Wow, what an exciting passage. Turn with me to chapter 14, where now we see Abraham going out and doing something great for God, something that was really beyond him. And the usefulness in service, I think we can read the passage here where Abraham rescues Lot, verses 12 to 16 of chapter 14. And they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed. And there came one that had escaped and told Abram, the Hebrew, for he dwelt in the plain of Mamre, the Amorite, brother of Eshcol, and brother of Aner. And there were confederate with Abram. And when Abraham heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his trained servants, born in his own house, 318, pursued them unto Dan, and he divided himself against them. He and his servants by night smote them, pursued them. Verse 16, he brought back all the goods, brought again his brother Lot, his goods, the women also, the people. And the king of Sodom went out to meet him after his return from the slaughter of the Chedorlaomer and of the kings that were with him at the valley of Shaveh, which is in the king's dale. All right, now, so we see here this great deliverance. By the way, this is the first war battle that's mentioned in the Bible. Abraham traveled about 120 miles to do this great deed, and it's an act of absolutely remarkable faith. And once we begin living by faith, we really become clay in the potter's hand. We become useful tools in God's work. We begin having an impact on people around us. And really, apart from Abraham's obedient act in leaving Ur of the Chaldees, this is the first great act that we see of him, this outward service of usefulness in the Lord's work. This battle to free Lot from this league of kings led by Chedorlaomer, this is a great display of Abraham's faith. Faith in action. Deferring to Lot was a decision, but this is an act of faith, okay? This is great faith because this act put a lot of people's lives at risk, their very lives. And let me just say that like Abraham, who took a weapon in his hand and went out and did the work, we need to be willing to get our hands dirty in our service for God, so to speak. It's tiring. It's demanding to serve the Lord. It means spending time and investing in other people's lives. It's not easy. It's messy. That battlefield, I guarantee you, was a messy place. It'd make you sick to your stomach to see what occurred in this event we just read about. And it's a physical reality that has a spiritual lesson for us. And that's the dirtiness. It is the difficulty, the messiness of really getting our hands dirty in the Lord's work. Sometimes there's no reciprocation in the lives we're trying to help. In fact, your efforts in trying to help other people spiritually are sometimes, even frequently, going to be rewarded with backstabbing. So this is the example we have here of how God used Abraham in a wonderful way to free Lot and others. Now, there's nothing in Abraham's background that would indicate any experience in warfare. So we can only assume that this was way outside his comfort zone. And that's what faith asks us to do. Okay? Now, there is a discerning faith here. This was a remarkable faith that Abraham took. It's also a discerning faith. I want to point out how he grew in his discernment. Very great lack of discernment what he did down in Egypt. Now, tremendous perception in how he deals with the king of Sodom. He had a right to take gifts from the king of Sodom. He just delivered him and his people. But Abraham had the spiritual discernment to perceive that taking anything from this pagan king would allow other people to claim that he had rescued them for what he could get out of it. You see? And Abraham very, very much wanted God to get the glory. He didn't want to cast any open door for someone to question the motive here. He wanted everyone to see, I did this out of faith in service for God to rescue my relative, and I trusted God. I didn't go out on the battlefield to see what I could get. Now, that really brings us to a discussion point this morning. And let's put it on the screen here. When is help helpful? Because Abraham just went down and rescued Lot, and you could really argue, couldn't you, that Lot got himself into this trouble. It was of his own doing. Would you or I have come to Lot's aid in this situation, considering that his plight was a direct result of a selfish choice that he made to put himself above Abraham, to coddle the wicked culture of Sodom and Gomorrah? Do you think that perhaps Abraham was tempted to think within himself, well, Lot, you know, you selfishly chose the well-watered plain, so now you must suffer the consequences and learn from your wrong action? I mean, that's a very legitimate way to think, isn't it? So would any of us be tempted to respond that way in this situation? How eager would you or I be to risk our lives to help someone who caused his own trouble and had an ill-advised decision? So it takes some wisdom, doesn't it? So it's a legitimate question. I'm asking you this question. I'd like some feedback from the auditorium class here this morning. What could you say that would add light? Because, look, I think we all would agree, there are times when intervening actually works against the purposes of God in a person's life. But there are other times when intervention will absolutely rescue that person and restore them and help them. So how do we have the wisdom to know the difference? That's the question here. It's a very important question. It's a thing we all face. Who's going to raise their hand and give some thoughts? All right, so family legitimately warrants a greater level of involvement. Can't argue with that. And I don't think we would have seen Abraham doing this if it wasn't a family member. Yeah. I mean, he didn't go down there just because he felt sorry for the king of Sodom. Okay. So, yes, I would agree that we will take more extraordinary measures to help a family member. But even in that case, when do we know whether our help is beneficial or not? Seeking the Lord in the decision is not assuming that we know how to help or whether we should help or whatever. And, of course, we can err on either side by withholding help or by helping in a way that actually allows that person to continue to make bad decisions. So, for sake of time here, this is what I came up with. I think it's a summary statement. We should never delight in anyone's suffering, even when it's self-inflicted. We should always be anxious to offer restorative intervention. That's the key. Is my intervention in this person's life going to help them or hurt them? And we need to sort out what other motives may be running through our minds. Okay? So, the goal, of course, is restoration. And there's more we could say, but time is my enemy this morning. I want to give us a final thought. Clearly, Abraham had no good impact for his family or upon a lost world while he was living a defeated life. Ruled by fears, ruled by human rationalizations, to the exclusion of faith in an omnipotent God. But we see his faith growing exponentially once he decided to live by principle rather than faithless expediency. We can imagine him boldly stepping out to rescue Lot. In fact, I was reading that incorrectly. We can't imagine him boldly stepping out to rescue Lot had he not first chosen God's path over the well-watered plain of Jordan. So how do we build our faith? By allowing God to prove himself through a series of faith decisions. If we don't take that first step of faith, we won't travel that path. And Romans 5, verses 1 to 4 shows us that process. We take step after step of growth and growth, and we build and build. And therefore, Look at the process here. Therefore, being justified by faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, by whom also we have access by faith into this grace wherein we stand. Now listen to the process. And rejoice in hope of glory of God, and not only so, but we glory in tribulation, knowing that tribulation worketh patience, patience worketh experience, and experience hope. And so we see the process that God has for us to take in our growth. So that's the challenge this morning, and I'm very thankful we made it through there. There's a few other things I could have said, but we pretty much covered the lesson. That makes me happy. Any closing thought before we dismiss this morning? All right. Well, thank you for your good attention this morning, and we'll go ahead and dismiss and prepare for the morning service.